and Polly, Wayne, and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I'm Andrew.
It's always so nice to have you back, Andrew. We miss you when you're gone.
I miss you guys, too. I just can't wait to download the episode each week and hear what I missed.
So what did we talk about last week, Andrew?
So what was your favorite part of the show, Andrew?
My favorite part was when you guys talked about how you felt about Absolute Superman. I was happy to hear that you guys enjoyed it much like myself.
Absolute Superman is literally the name of the title of the podcast episode.
But I know that you guys liked it.
Yeah, because we told you. We told you, Andrew.
I don't think there's any audio proof of that, honestly.
No, that's right. We were not hitting record at that time.
I was.
And that's true. Aaron was recording.
Aaron's always recording.
So, Aaron, I this is not on the outline, but I just got distracted. I saw a little video the other day about Aaron is out in Central Texas. Would you consider it Central Texas? I don't know.
It's North Texas.
North Texas.
Central Texas is like Austin.
Oh, okay. So Aaron's North Texas, but I watched a little video about the new theme park, the new Universal theme park.
Yeah.
Coming out to your neck of the woods.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to be over in Collin County.
Yeah, it was, apparently construction has gone vertical. There's going to be a hotel and stuff. It's unfortunately, Aaron hates theme parks.
I hate them.
So, on top of that, this is a specifically kid themed theme park. It's called Universal Kids Resort. So it's a double win.
It brings together my two hatreds.
Oh, so there's one thing Aaron dislikes more than theme parks. It's children. But it's pretty exciting here. They're gonna have Jurassic Park. They're gonna have Shrek and Trolls and SpongeBob SquarePants.
You know, I will go to a theme park when they bring back the Star Trek experience. That's when I'll be in a theme park.
Well, we did talk about how there's going to be a Star Trek experience.
Yeah.
Coming out to, speaking of Universal, to Universal Studios Hollywood.
Yep.
The only thing they've said is apparently you will be able to step on the bridge from the Picard show. I don't know if it's literally the set being transported.
It won't be the 1701D from the Picard show. It'll be the La Serena.
Oh, God.
Seasons 1 and 2.
That's it's just actually a giant green screen.
Yeah, that's what I assumed when Paul said that.
No, I believe it's the Enterprise D. It's the fat one.
Hey, easy now. Don't body shame the lady known as Enterprise.
Enterprise D.
Yeah.
So, Aaron, have you ever done a Star Trek experience?
Yes.
Because I did the one in Vegas when it was still there.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. I loved Quark's Bar.
Oh, yeah. I loved everything about the Star Trek experience in Vegas. And I just wish that they would, do another one. I would love to go to it. I was there several days. It was a wonderful experience. I love that place.
You know, it's funny that we're bringing Star Trek experience into it. Apparently, the Westgate Resort and Casino out in Vegas, you can it's built on some bones of the Star Trek experience. So
because that used to be the Hilton, right?
Yeah, the Las Vegas Hilton.
Yeah.
So you can apparently, and just so everyone knows, unlike most things in Vegas where they literally just blow up the building and it goes away, Westgate was built on the same bones. You can actually see the leftover remnants of the promenade. It is still relatively intact.
Yeah.
It's behind, but it's tucked away behind the gift shop. So if you go into the gift shop, you can kind of see it behind the shelves that the promenade is still there. Now, the rest of it's not, right? The museum, the ride, that kind of thing. Right. That stuff all got transported to Old Vegas and now is, probably in storage or something. But the promenade is still there.
Yeah, that's crazy. You shared that video with me. I was like, this is nuts. I'm going to have to go, on an archaeology dig at what's it called again, Paul?
The Westgate Resort. And for anyone who wants to check out the video, check out Vegas Navigator on Instagram, because that's how the video popped. I don't follow them, but I guess I follow Star Trek-y things. So it was a suggested video.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, since we last spoke, gentlemen, we've had a couple of, there was D23 Brazil. Yeah, so Disney had their their kind of fan convention out in Brazil, and they didn't reveal any news necessarily, but they showed a new trailer for Thunderbolts. I believe there was a new trailer for Captain America: Brave New World, and they released some teasers of upcoming Disney Plus shows, both Star Wars and Marvel related. But you know, they are really hyping this. I feel like we've now seen, the Thunderbolts trailers that they've released are all like 4 or 5 minutes long. I feel like I've seen like half of this movie already because these trailers are so long.
Yeah.
See, it doesn't feel like there's that much in them to me, but I have to say
you say that, but I kind of feel like there's just not much to the movie. And that's why the trailers are look like they're all from like the same scenes of the movie.
Yeah, I had zero interest in Thunderbolts until this trailer. I think this trailer actually looked good. I really enjoyed everything I saw in it. I'm still like, if they can't make a trailer look good, that's the one job they really have. So that doesn't mean the movie's going to be any good, but I am suddenly interested in the movie just after that trailer.
Go ahead, Aaron.
I was just going to say it looks like a lot of fun.
I
think that's been missing from Marvel for a while, so I am really very interested in this movie.
Yeah, what I got out of the trailer, it looked fun, it looked funny. They're making Bucky a badass again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so much I really enjoyed. Yolanda was great in the trailer.
I'm stoked. It looks good to me.
Well, one of the things that I found interesting is that Valentina, Julia Louis-Dreyfus has taken hold of Avengers Tower.
Yeah, so that
she owns it.
Yeah.
So, it's got a hell of a cast. I'm hopeful for it.
I'm wondering why they're still bothering to bury the lead and just show Bob.
Yeah, not Sentry.
Yeah, not Sentry, just Bob.
Yeah, Bob. I guess they're from leaving accounting. I'm Bob from accounting. Yeah, so I think it looks pretty good. I think, I'm looking forward to, Marvel has a couple of major releases next year, including Captain America: Brave New World and Thunderbolts.
I think they
both look good.
I am optimistic about these two movies coming out.
Yeah, both are movies that I had next to no interest in until the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I would have been much more interested in Captain America: Brave New World, except for knowing that they scrapped it and went back to the table, that it's a year late because of all the reshoots.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I wasn't overly impressed by Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Well, yeah. I liked Falcon and Winter Soldier. I think it's a good show. I thought it had a good place, but there is so much on the line for Marvel at the movies. And, they have really got to earn back their place, because even though I personally don't feel like the quality has fallen, that is certainly the perception. And that's how Wall Street feels. Mm-hmm. And so they've got to blow this stuff out of the water. They got to have big openings and they've got to really get the fans back in the seats.
Yeah, and they're heavily weighted towards the first half of the year. So we've got Brave New World in February, Thunderbolts in May, and Fantastic Four in July.
God, I can't wait for it. FF is 25. I don't know. For some reason, I thought it was 26.
Yeah, July 2025. So we shall see if Marvel has a good year or not. Now, I will say I'm a little less interested in some of the television shows that they showed. Ironheart. I can take or leave. I'm obviously super excited about Daredevil Born Again, especially the fact that they've got Frank Castle returning to it. We're beaming up.
Aaron's beaming out. Oh my God.
But I'm a little less interested in some of the other shows like What If, Marvel Zombies, Wonder Man.
What If is interesting to me that they've decided this is the final season, that they're wrapping it up with this.
I'm interested in Wonder Man only because I'm a huge West Coast Avengers nerd, and Simon Williams was a founding member.
Well, and I do like Yahya Abdul-Mateen, right? From Aquaman, and I think he's a great actor. It's also bringing back the Ben Kingsley character, Trevor from Iron Man.
Iron Man, yeah.
Three. So I don't know. I think. it doesn't come out till next December. They've only shown like 15 seconds of footage, so I'm just a little less interested in that than I am in. I mean, Daredevil obviously is the thing I'm most looking forward to, even counting the movies.
Are you guys interested in the more, you know, you're talking far future there. Are you guys more interested in the current Marvel DC crossover movie that's out?
What?
You know, Captain America, Black Adam teaming up to save Santa.
You know, I actually did see Red One.
I'm going to see it this past week.
They had preview screenings. I mean, I shouldn't say, like, they just had like old school sneak preview, like watch the movie early. I had to pay for the ticket and stuff. Right. But we saw it this past Sunday. Honestly, I enjoyed it. I thought it's a perfectly fine, fun Christmas movie.
That is a ringing endorsement. It's perfectly fine.
Yeah, it is getting like horrible reviews.
But... You know, I don't think it should be getting horrible reviews. It is. I think people just want to hate on some of these things lately, especially rock stuff. Yeah. But the movie's, it's fun. It you know.
I think the trailers look good.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a Christmas classic, but it is a fun Christmas movie. So I have no complaints about it. They did a lot of fun things with it. Some cool, obviously fun to see Chris Evans and stuff like that. But it's a cute movie.
I enjoyed Black Adam and it got horrible reviews too. So I think me and a couple friends are gonna go see it.
I also enjoyed The Flash. So maybe this is for me.
I think you would enjoy it, Aaron. I mean, it is something that you're watching and you're like, this is ridiculous, but I'm enjoying it, right? Well, like the concept of it is silly.
I am giddy with excitement that Romulus hits Hulu this week.
Have you not seen Romulus yet?
I have. I didn't see it in the theaters, and it's been all I can do not to buy it on digital. But I'm like, it's gonna be on Hulu on the 21st. So I'm just
seen it. I haven't seen it either.
When we talk next, I will have seen Romulus.
Well, when everyone sees Romulus, we can talk about it because I saw it in the theater. So
well, we'll have to wait a real long time since Wayne has never seen an alien movie.
Okay. Well, when everyone who's actually going to see Romulus sees Romulus,
when three of us see Romulus, we'll
that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What's exciting for streaming though is both Deadpool and Wolverine has it streaming, and so has Transformers 1.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Transformers 1 is on what?
Paramount.
So if you have Paramount, I really recommend Transformers 1. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I did not see it in the theaters, but I would definitely watch it on Paramount.
I'm actually pretty excited for there's a couple of movies wildly divergent in genre. The Wild Robot is now on streaming, but only paid streaming. So I'm kind of waiting a little bit to see if that one goes a little bit cheaper, but I've heard excellent things. I really want to see that. And this coming week, speaking of Christmas movies, Terrifier 3 comes out on streaming. And it's one of those films that, like, you know, Terrifier is just this extreme gore fest thing. And I love horror, but like Terrifier is just, you know, I've seen the first two. Yeah, the gore goes so gratuitous, it even makes me cringe. So I was like, do I want to go to the movies or do I just want to wait for streaming? So finally, my patience has paid off and Terrifier 3, I'll be able to watch it in the comfort of my own home where I can just fast forward if something gets a little too gratuitously gory. And it's a Christmas movie. So because he works at Santa. It takes place during the holidays, Andrew.
Mm. Yeah. Not sure by that definition, but okay.
Spirit of the season.
Terrifier, the spirit of Christmas.
Well, you know, speaking in the spirit of giving, last week Aaron had given us a recommendation. He had picked up New Burn, Volume 1 by Chip Zdarsky and
Jacob Phillips.
It's a series from Image Comics, very, you know, crime noir type series. And he had recommended it, and I believe it was on sale on Amazon. It was actually really inexpensive. So I picked it up while we were recording last week, and I was like, I'll give it a read. And so, Aaron, I read this book.
Yes.
And I really enjoyed it. So for anyone who's not familiar with New Burn, it is, like I said, crime noir. It's about an ex-cop who is now basically a private investigator who works for all the crime families in New York. I think it's New York.
Yes.
And so he is, you know, he is impartial. He's kind of like Switzerland, you know, in that, like, he will work for any crime family. Even if they're feuding, they know that he's off limits. Like, he's the guy they call. He works for all of them. You know, like, it, you know, he just, it's so, it's an interesting,
He's essentially untouchable because he works for all the families. And so everyone knows that this guy is hands off. He's got ultimate power. And, you know, one of the things I love about the book is that, you know, the unlisted crime family that he works for is also the NYPD.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and the specifically the New York Police Department's officers union, you know, that they're a crime family as well. And I'm just like, oh, shit. Yeah. I love this book. I love it. Number one, each issue is really kind of one and done.
Mm-hmm. It is very much, if I were to describe it, it is very much, you are watching something that's like a 30 to 35 minute HBO Max TV show.
Yeah.
New Byrne visually, I don't know why, but he just really struck me as visually the guy from The Hobbit, Martin Freeman, even though New Byrne's clearly not British or anything like that.
Right.
But visually on the cover, I don't know why, if it's just the cover artist chose to draw him this way, but I'm like, kind of looks like Martin Freeman. Like, Martin Freeman could play this guy. You know, he just needs to learn, you know, a New York accent. But, you know, he takes a young criminal under his wing, also an ex-cop under his wing. And, you know, it's about how they solve crimes for the crime bosses. But, you know, things, of course, get out of hand.
And so he is very much a Sherlock Holmes kind of character. You know,
or a Watson character, Martin Freeman.
yeah. and she's very much Watson, right? I mean, she's the one who's journaling his adventures, and she's super smart, right? I mean, I love this book so much. I haven't bought volume two yet, but I'm going to do that this weekend.
Yeah, I have not. And, you know, sometimes you read books and you're like, this is, I can see this movie playing out
before my
eyes, and I'm casting it and, you know, stuff like that. And in this case, I, you know, this is cinematic, but not big screen cinematic. This is, like I said, felt like I was watching a show on HBO Max.
Yep.
You know, because each issue is self-contained-ish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it ends with a season, a two-part season finale kind of thing. You know, but they're tied together, but also, you know, individual stories, and nothing happens in this book that couldn't just be portrayed in live action with minimal special effects, right? So it very much felt like I was reading a TV show, but in the best way.
Yeah.
You know, good humor, good, you know, crime, you know, mystery, you know, good banter. Chip Zdarsky is, you know, he's kind of all over the place in his writing. And I mean that, like, he's also writing, I think, Batman. I think he's the current writer on Batman.
Yep.
So, you know, he's kind of doing all these different things. But this is really strong.
It's a huge flex, I feel, when you look at, you know, Zdarsky's superhero work, you know, and then you read New Byrne and you're like, damn, this guy's got some range. I'm just deeply impressed with the very subtle artistry of the book. It reminds me in text and feel of Gotham Central, right?
Yeah, I can see that. And even the visually, like the cover, it kind of feels like the Greg Rucka and Sean Phillips kind of book, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just so well put together. And while the artwork is often rather minimal, it's not, you know, brilliant, vibrant colors like you'd see in a superhero comic. You know, it's more muted. As you said, it's more noir. It very much has that sort of gritty detective element about it, while also being, you know, it's kind of competence porn, right? You know, because Easton and Emily are just so good at what they do. You get to really admire how they're putting things together as they go. And, you know, there are some turns in the story where you're like, oh, shit. I mean, the story is so out of left field. I was surprised several times in the storytelling. And that's nice. That doesn't happen all the time. And it was really nice. You know, here I am, you know, jaded comic book reader, and just being thrilled and excited by each page, because the storytelling is so good and the writing is so clever. I really big thumbs up. This is like one of my big discoveries of 2024. And you know, you will hear me talk about it again in the Funny Book Awards this year, because it was just fantastic.
Yeah, thank you for the recommendation. So I'm looking forward to
absolutely.
I'm going to check out volume two as well, and because I powered through this.
It's a fast read.
It's a fast read. I mean, but not fast at the expense of story, right? Which I appreciate.
Well, I know you boys were excited that G.I. Joe is back this week.
Go Joe!
So, Andrew, Wayne, did you read G.I. Joe?
No, I bought it, but I haven't read it. Don't worry about spoiling it. Feel free.
Okay.
Well, there's one thing we probably shouldn't spoil, but...
I don't know. It's like the redacted pages. I feel like, you know, because we talked about how they sent us preview copies.
You definitely should talk about whatever's on the redacted pages.
Well, let's start at the beginning, I guess. So, you know, we've had this build up to G.I. Joe. We've had, you know, we've had Cobra Commander. We had Duke. We had Scarlet. We had Destro. And finally coming together, bring these story threads together into a composite book.
And G.I. Joe is, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I will say that, you know, the creative team on this book is the same as Duke. So it's Joshua Williamson on writing, Tom Riley on art. So very much has that same look and feel as the Duke book that started it all.
Then we finally get to see Cobra and G.I. Joe come to blows, exchange hostile fire. It was exciting. It was a little slow in the first half-ish of the book. It was a little – there's definitely the first six pages were people who did not read the preceding series. But once you get past that kind of slow spot at the beginning and kind of get into the current plot line, it moved along briskly and it had a shocking ending. But I did love how when Duke throws himself out at the Cobra copter, when he did that, I was like, well, that's insane. Who would do that? And then the next panel is Cobra Commander saying, that man is insane. It's like, yeah, I know, right?
So I'm really curious how they're going to do the book from the standpoint of in the cartoon, nobody ever actually got hit. They shot at each other a lot, but, you know, they don't.
Well, Wayne, kill funny characters. That you should mention that, because it that's literally funny. What happens in the last three pages.
Someone gets shot.
Yeah, so they had redacted the last three pages in the preview copies that we were sent until this week. And I had assumed, because, again, we talked about the last time they redacted some pages for a preview book was Void Rivals number one that revealed the connection to Transformers, right? Yeah. So I wrongly assumed that that was what we were going to see in this book. I mean, we know Megatron is still out there, you know, and so I had assumed that this was going to be some type of maybe Megatron reveal or something like that. But it's not. It's actually the redacted pages were actually, to Andrew's point, hiding the fact that there is a character that some Cobra soldiers just blow away lasers. Like, I mean, he gets shot like 9 times.
Yeah, it's not looking good. It does not look good for him.
Yeah. I will say for you, Wayne, probably less impactful, even though the character is a character that was introduced in Duke. But for long term G.I. Joe fans, it is a pretty shocking ending.
Yeah, it is. And you don't know if he's dead or not. You know, is Cobra shooting the new laser Energon guns? By the way, what do you think happens when they shoot those Energon guns at a Transformer?
I guess we'll find out at some
point. Does it just heal them? Is it like they're sucking down a protein shake?
Yeah, maybe. Just open their mouth to shoot here.
I'm just glad to hear it wasn't Scarlet, because so far, Scarlet is my favorite character out of all of the G.I. Joe books I've read.
Yeah, no, we don't see Scarlet in this issue. So, this very much picks up on threads from Destro, Cobra Commander, and Duke. Not so much the Scarlet book, but that's okay. She's over, you know, in Japan. So, you know, that's not connecting here yet. But, you know, I think to your point, Andrew, the book starts as a first issue. And this is, let me preface this by saying, I actually really enjoy G.I. Joe number one. It felt like I was reading the start of the second arc of a book, though.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like I said, it ties into things from Duke, Destro, Cobra Commander. So it just kind of feels like, okay, start of the second arc, rather than like this is the big bad first issue. Because this is one of the best sellers in comic books this year was this issue. And I will say as a first issue, I would call it not strong. But
it was new as the continuation friendly. Of
what they've been setting up, it's been good. Yeah.
It's new reader friendly. It's like I said, it's a little slow to get started. They kind of recap who all the Joes are at the beginning as you kind of read through it. So, which if you've been reading the series, you already know all this. But I'm excited for it. I
like that they've established some things that from G.I. Joe lore, like Springfield, USA.
Yeah.
You know, and then things like that. So it's if you enjoyed the Duke series, I think you'll love this. If you did not read the Duke series, I highly recommend reading at least that one before you hop in here.
Yeah.
But I would say Duke and Cobra Commander, right. Maybe less so Destro, but Duke and Cobra Commander are 100% required reading for this.
I do hope that at some point we'll see a scene of, you know, the Cobra troops in Springfield, USA. And, you know, it's a middle-aged man who works at the local nuclear factory and his wife and three children. I just hope that happens at some point.
still no Snake Eyes, though. So
No. I think he'll show up. Yeah, I think he'll show up when we pivot back to Scarlet's storyline at some point.
I think so, too. I think, you know, I'm assuming they'll probably save that for the second or third arc where they pull in the, you know, the Scarlet arc into this.
Yeah, the Ashikagis.
Yes. So, Aaron, the only book that you and I read – oh, no, we have a few books in common. But we had talked about, about holding off Action Comics, talking about the current arc in Action Comics by Mark Waid and Clayton Henry. You know, we were going to talk about it last week, but we're like, let's hold off because we believe the milestone 1075th issue of Action Comics would actually be the conclusion of Phantoms and the backup feature Supergirl Universe End. You know, this is what happens. I've been assuming things and I've been wrong 2 out of 2 times this week because this is definitely not the end of the arc. I don't even know. Technically, I don't even know if we're halfway through the arc because, you know, there's still quite a bit to resolve here. But we're you know, I'm curious about your thoughts because we have not really spoken about it. I believe Action Comics is either releasing bi-weekly or weekly now. It's definitely releasing frequently, kind of powering through the story.
Bi-weekly.
I'm
struggling with the current iteration of Action Comics, if I'm being perfectly honest. There are elements of the main story that I'm enjoying. I don't care for the villain at work in the Phantom Zone. You know, the guy with the teeth. The setup is there's problems in the Phantom Zone, and we as readers have known that for a while now because people keep escaping from the Phantom Zone, and for whatever reason Superman hasn't deigned to go check this stuff out until just now. He gets to the Phantom Zone and he finds out that, you know, in the Phantom Zone everyone's supposed to be a phantom, right? You know, it's this neighboring dimension where people are just ghostly and they can occasionally listen in on what's going on in the corporeal world, but they have no substance. Well, something has happened in the Phantom Zone to give the individuals their substance, and that matter has begun to take shape in the Phantom Zone. And that's all, you know, crazy because that's not the nature of the zone. So Superman goes to check it out. He runs into his old friend Mon-El. Now, this is one of those things I love because I love Mon-El. He is one of my favorite characters from back when he was introduced way back, I want to say, in the Silver Age of comics. Mon-El's just one of my favorite guys. I loved him in the new Krypton books. I loved him, you know, just everywhere he's ever appeared. He's just one of my favorite characters. I just really get a kick out of the Daxamite, who, you know, is Superman's best friend. I just think he's a lot of fun. But they have tagged into this story. This is, you know, Superman going to the Phantom Zone, Superman being engaged in Phantom Zone villains. This is, you know, harkens back to the very beginnings of these stories, you know, from, you know, 60, 50 years ago. It has also dovetailed into a Superman winds up on Krypton prior to, you know, its destruction, and he meets his young parents there. And I've always enjoyed those stories, too, and I'm enjoying that. But I really hate the anchor story of the villain in the Phantom Zone. I just really dislike him. And his whole thing is he discovered the Phantom Zone and saw that it was this perpetual prison, you know, with no hope of parole for all of these, quote, tortured souls. And so he starts making it a better place for them. He gives them substance. He, you know, creates matter in the Phantom Zone. And lo and behold, he then discovers that these guys, you know, once they have the ability to touch one another, begin slaughtering each other because, you know, most of these guys are serial killer sociopaths. And so he decides that, well, you know, I tried to make a heaven for them, but if they reject that, I'll make it hell. And so that's the story with the villain. So he started off being a good guy and now he's a bad guy. And I just don't care for him at all. But Paul, what do you think?
Yeah, here's the thing. It's fine. I will tell you, I know that's been my word of the day. It's fine. Uh-huh. It's not bad. The art by Clayton Henry is, of course, strong.
It is.
I don't love Superman time travels back to Krypton stories. Mm-hmm. Because I've read so many of them. You know, Jeff Loeb, I think, wrote one back in the day. You know, we've seen it quite a, you know, John Byrne, I think, wrote one. Like, I've seen Superman back in the days of.
Yeah, you get this story in every iteration of Superman. Right?
Yeah.
And every honestly, time it's the first time.
Yeah.
Right? It's one of the big reasons I didn't pick up this story arc is I like the Phantom Zone as a concept, but I know the moment he goes into the Phantom Zone, he's going to somehow end up back in Krypton because that's how they usually get him back there. And I just not interested in that story.
Yeah, and you know, it frustrates me that every time you see it, it's the first time. Or every time he does it, it's like the first time. And I'm like, but you've done this before. Unless they wrote that out of continuity, but I thought exactly. All continuity counted because of Superman Reborn. So, you know, it's not a bad storyline. To your point, the Phantom Zone stuff. I'm also not a big Phantom Zone fan.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Phantom Zone is a fine place to imprison someone. Mm-hmm. And it's a fine place for someone to escape from, you know, for the villain to escape from. I'm not interested in seeing Superman spend any time there.
Yeah, I feel like it just occurred to me, like what is not hitting me on the storyline is that it is two Superman storylines I've read 1,000 times before combined into one. Mm-hmm. And now don't get me wrong. Mark Waid is a strong writer and Clayton Henry is a strong artist. So it's still good and readable, but it is not anything new. That's what's kind of bugging me about it.
Well, I will tell you that the element that is new is questioning the morality of the Phantom Zone. You know, Superman is doing a lot of questioning like, you know, how did my father do this? You know, this is a terrible punishment to throw these people in here, even though, you know, they may have been sent in there for 30 years. But, you know, to be 30 years and not be able to touch anything, to be 30 years and not to essentially count, right? You know, to not matter. But, you know, you see when he gets to Krypton, according to the story that's being told, it wasn't Jor-El's idea. It was the Science Council's idea. And, you know, and it's an improvement on what they were doing, launching their criminals into space.
Yeah. So I appreciated that twist, but it's, you know, and maybe that's just something that's always, maybe this is Mark Waid finding a way to retcon something that always bugged him. Like, how could Jor-El create something so cruel? And you find out, he really didn't. Like, Jor-El was basically creating that as a place, you know, kind of like the transporter cloud or whatever, where you could store people. You know, if they were, you know, if Krypton was going to explode, his plan was basically to store Kryptonians there until such point as they could, you know, come out somewhere else. But it was stolen by the Science Council and used for, you know, for prisoner as a prison. So, I mean, I appreciated that about it. I will say the main thing I appreciated about Action Comics 75 was not that. It was not the backup by Supergirl, which was this one I felt was a little bit of a stronger.
I got to tell you that the Supergirl stories are just so uneven. You know, and I guess I should back up and say the whole point of this run of Action Comics is that everything's serialized. You know, there's no one and done here. It is very much a, you know, previously on Action Comics. You know, it's the old serials. So, you know, God knows when this Krypton Phantom Zone story is going to be done, because, you know, the whole point of this, the whole exercise is serialization. Yeah. But you were saying, Paul, what was your favorite story in the book?
The third one. So the third story is the one new thing or special thing about this being a milestone 1075th issue. It's written by Joshua Williamson, art by John Bogdanov and Norm Rapmond. And it's basically Perry White doing a trip down memory lane on a walk in Metropolis. And for anyone who's not been reading the Superman books recently, Perry White is running for mayor, and Lois Lane has taken over as editor-in-chief of the Daily Planet. So, this is basically the reveal that Perry White has won the mayoral election. And so I actually – it's a cute story. I mean, it's – and I – you know, John Bogdanov was – I loved his work on Superman Man of Steel back in the day. Yep. And so I – you know, the fact that it is – and it's still strong. So, you know, it's a quaint story, but they certainly find a couple of panels that they can – you know, have some Superman action in.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, no, I thought it was good too. Last thing about this, the thing that I really cannot abide in the Superman story, the Phantom Zone Krypton story, is that Lara's got blonde hair. I just Lara is not blonde. I'm just on record on that. She is a brunette. I don't care for blonde Lara. Just saying.
Well, we will file a sternly worded letter to Action Comics editorial
from the desk of funny books.
From the desk of funny, on our letterhead, our official letterhead that we need to create. also from DC Comics was the second issue of Absolute Batman, which Aaron refuses to read just out of spite.
Out of spite.
Why so spiteful, Aaron? Why so spiteful?
One, I don't need another Batman book.
Yeah, you
and,
do.
Nah,
yeah,
I don't.
You don't.
And I certainly don't
need just need this one.
Yeah, I also don't need the ridiculously proportioned Batman book.
It's so badass.
An Absolute Alfred. I just want an Absolute Alfred prequel series.
Yeah. You know, this book is very much, you know, we talked about Absolute Superman last week and how all three of these Absolute books are good. You know, I think the Absolute Superman felt a lot like Superman Earth One to me. But I'm really enjoying what they're establishing here in Absolute Batman. I love the fact that, now don't get me wrong, some of the dialogue is a little cringe, but what I mean by that is, like, I love the fact that Batman's friends are, you know, that his the group he grew up with and is still friends with are basically his rogues gallery.
Yeah, all supervillains.
In the future, perhaps. And we don't know if they'll become supervillains.
Yeah, they may never. Absolute, but, you know, they may just be these characters in this, and they may honestly end up being his crew, you know, his Batman support crew rather than a rogues gallery.
I would love that. I would really love that. Yeah. So he's using them essentially in this episode as informal informants, right? Where they're just having a poker. That poker game was great.
My favorite scene in the book was the poker game.
Yeah.
And there were some great scenes in this book.
So, Paul, I'm going to steal a word from you. I thought this issue was okay. I love the
word you're looking for is fine. The word you're
fine.
Fine.
I love the first issue a lot. It didn't feel like anything happened in this one. Like, the first issue had a lot of shock, had a lot of things going on, and this one didn't feel like it did anything.
I would disagree, but I mean I get it. Like, everything that was new in the first issue was just continued here. It's not introducing more new, but I like what they're doing with this new continuity. I like, you know, how Commissioner Gordon and Martha have at least a friendship.
Mayor Gordon.
Mayor Gordon and Martha Wayne, who's alive in this continuity, have some type of connection. It's not implied one way or the other what it is.
You know what it is.
I think that's what it is. I think they may be more than friends.
Yeah. Yeah. I did like that we finally have Bruce and Alfred together.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I do like how they finally meet. I like how Batman lays eyes on the leader of the party animals for the first time. And apparently he has a phone number to call him at. I wasn't quite sure where that number came from, but he was like, call me if you survive. you know, I like this. And then, of course, not Bluggart, the big cop who's Bullock. Corrupt. Bullock. I like this version of Bullock. I like this version of Babs. And I like, honestly, I like
all of it. I like all the continuity. The one thing I didn't like,
yeah,
is that Scott Snyder just can't help himself sometimes, and he has to Frank Miller up a book. And what I mean by that is Batman has, you know, he's in an apartment building and apparently has like built into it a hidden tank that just kind of roars out of the building.
No, that was ridiculous.
I had a big issue with that. This is a Batman that is not rich. How do you do that if you're not rich?
It looks like a modified bulldozer. He works in construction. I don't know. But yeah, the fact that because, you know, he does work construction. He did help build these things. Like, but the fact that there's a hidden in the basement giant monster truck bulldozer is a bit ridiculous. Yes.
Yeah. Especially to Wayne's point, without the resources, that he's an without the financial resources that we're aware of, right? Yeah. You know, how does he still find money for all this?
Yeah, because he's got hidden bases all over the city in the shape of a bat symbol.
Now, that being said, you know, maybe they'll explain it in the third issue, because he's an architect and he works in construction, maybe he's building these things within the walls somehow. I don't know, but they have not given the impression that he's financially wealthy.
Yeah, no. If he is doing it, then whoever the foreman is on these construction sites is really bad at their job to not catch it.
Yeah, but there are some Scott Snyder things that you got to overlook to it. But overall, I'm actually really enjoying it. I think it's a lot of fun. It's like dark fun. But I think Absolute, these first three books coming out of the Absolute line are just really, really worth reading.
Really strong. Really strong. Yeah. And I feel, you know, if you're not reading, I highly encourage you. I kind of feel bad if you miss out on it.
Yeah, agreed. Well, Aaron, you had some words that you wanted to share about Conquest 2099, issue 3. I read it as well. I have some brief thoughts, but I'm curious what your thoughts were on this issue.
Well, you know, just several weeks ago, you know, I did a deep dive into, you know, the Annihilation books from Marvel and Annihilation Conquest, the entire run of Nova, a lot of the original Guardians of the Galaxy from Abnett and Lanning, you know, all of that, you know, came out of that original Annihilation series. And so I was just really, you know, deeply steeped in, you know, Marvel's, you know, most recent foray into really doing, you know, sort of cosmic stories and basing their characters in space. And so when Conquest 2099 was announced, I was like, fuck, the Conquest storyline meets the 2099 universe. Color me there. I am in. And this book is crap. I hope I'm not harshing your mellow, Paul. But, you know, the setup sounded great. You know, Dracula sets up a new vampire society and then goes to war. I really have an issue with the vampires because they're not really vampires, you know.
No, yeah, they're just like weak aliens. They're just aliens, basically.
Exactly, they're just people like anybody else. You know, when you kill them, they don't turn to dust. You know, they you know, because we see the bad guys eating the corpses of the vampires, and you know, they're having babies, you know, whereas vampires reproduce by, you know, biting people. This book is garbage. I hate it. I read all three issues last night, and it is just crap. I cannot begin to describe my level of dissatisfaction, despite the fact that there is a story element that I really like. I love Wolverine Nova. you know, that the last surviving member of the Nova Corps is Logan with his bony claws. I like claws. That,
but they haven't done anything with it in this book.
Yeah, I know. It's great.
Unlike the Annihilation book, this book, or whatever the miniseries was called.
It was Annihilation.
It was Annihilation. Yeah. This series, he's basically just one note. There's nothing to his character.
Well, and what's sad about this is that Annihilation was so good.
Yeah.
Like, I loved Annihilation, but I'm feeling kind of the same way you are on this one, Aaron. I don't like the vampires. The idea of it sounded really cool. I liked Dracula in the back, you know, the back material for Annihilation. Mm-hmm. I thought it was all really good with Dracula, but I'm not enjoying this one either.
Well, and in this issue, the Silver Surfer 2099 shows up. And I don't really understand the point other than to have a Silver Surfer cameo. Dracula defeats the spiders on this planet. The spiders are the bad guys. And he's like, you know, they're like, should we eat all of these people, Lord Dracula? And he's like, no, I learned a long time ago that the only thing suitable for barbarians is the steak. And so we're getting ready to impale all these guys. And here comes the Silver Surfer to defend the bad guys. And I'm like, where the fuck were you, Silver Surfer, when they were, you know, killing an entire race of people? But you show up when, you know, justice is about to be given because you find that's too cruel. No one calls them on that bullshit. I'm just like, this book is garbage.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it, you know, and I'm glad to hear you say it because I read the first issue. And I'm like, this first issue isn't good, but, you know, I enjoyed the
other miniseries. But there was enough there.
Yeah. There was enough there.
Yeah.
But then. You know, but I didn't read issue two, and I got caught up this week by reading issue two and three because I figured we'd be talking about it because I saw it on a number of people's lists. But yeah, I genuinely did not care for this. I don't care for this storyline. And especially, I think one of the things that exacerbates it is that, you know, this is coming right after Blood Hunt, which was fantastic, you know, and portrayed vampires as scary and, you know, violent and, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's violence in this book, but scary and, you know, like, it felt like there were repercussions and things in that book. But this book just kind of feels like, I don't care. And, you know, honestly, I think it really boils down to the writing. I feel like all the characters are, other than Wolverine, are overly expositional. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no real emotional weight to the book. It's just kind of, you know, and it, to your point, it feels like these scenes are kind of thrown together just to kind of ensure that all the playing pieces that they have set up are there. And there's still two more issues, don't get me wrong.
Two more issues that I won't be reading.
Okay, that was going to be my question.
Yeah,
well, no, Wayne, I'm out. Did you read this book? Wayne read this book.
I have not gotten to it yet, but
okay,
I bought it because
I couldn't remember which book you said you read.
I feel invested in it at this point because I've been reading it, but I'm not enjoying it, the series so far.
Yeah, it's going to be a struggle for me to decide if I'm going to pick up the last two just to finish off the story arc or not. But yeah, I'm not enjoying it.
Well, it was super disappointing because I, you know, like I said, I was, you know, prepped to enjoy another, you know, Annihilation/Conquest 2099 book. And boy, it was just garbage. But hey, Paul. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, actually, before we hop into next week's books, one of the things I do want to say is a book we didn't talk about this week because I'm the only one who read it.
Well, it's not on the outline, Paul.
Yeah, I'm taking control.
I'm just saying I'm looking at our outline here and, you know, this isn't here.
It's not. But I'm going to throw in Amazing Spider-Man issue 61.
It's just that it's not on the outline.
Yeah, I know, but here it is. I already said it out loud.
I guess what I'm saying is I'm looking at the outline and I don't see it here, Paul.
Well, I mean, I can add it to the outline right now. So Amazing Spider-Man issue 61 is the start of the new Eight Deaths of Spider-Man arc written by Joe Kelly, the dude has written tons of comics in the past. He's one of the most iconic writers of Deadpool. He's written a bunch of Superman. He's written a lot of animated series and independent books. I mean, the dude's just kind of been all over the place. He's very prolific. But He's writing the book with Ed McGuinness on art. And so this is where Dr. Doom, as the Sorcerer Supreme, you know, Dr. Strange had made a deal with an ancient being where every once in a while he, you know, in order to defend Earth, basically, Dr. Doom would have to do battle with the eight minions of this ancient being. But they were way more powered than him. So thankfully, Dr. Doom had some type of item in his, I don't remember the names of them, but he had some type of mystical item that basically would bring him back to life when he died fighting the eight stages of battle. And so Dr. Doom is like, well, you know, this shit's beneath me. So Spider-Man, I've chosen you to be the guy to take this on. So Dr. Doom, as Sorcerer Supreme, has tasked Spider-Man with being the guy who fights these eight beings to defend Earth, and given him the ability to come back to life. He's given him this mystical item so that Spider-Man can come back to life when he inevitably dies during these trials. And so we see the first death of Spider-Man in this book and in the rebirth. This is, like I said, this is kind of the first book that I've read that really takes on the storyline of Emperor Doom coming out of or King Doom, whatever. I think it's Emperor Doom coming out of that Blood Hunt arc. And I really enjoyed it. Dr. Doom is fun. You know, Spider-Man's good. I enjoyed the costume that's brought into it. I enjoy, you know, this mystical storyline being brought into the Spider-Man arc. So I would recommend it. I think it's a fun book, and it's one of the ones I enjoyed the most this week.
Wow. It wasn't on the list.
No, but it is now. I typed it in the chat.
I see that you amended the list, but you know, you bothered Andrew so much with this, he has left the podcast.
Yeah, Andrew had to go to work. But let's talk about what's coming out next week.
Well, okay, fine. Oh, well, Paul, hey, Paul, what's coming out next week?
Look at that. Look at that passion. well, next week we actually, you know, it's a bit of a lighter week. We have new issues of Flash Gordon from Mad Cave Studios. New issue of Geiger from Image Comics. From Marvel and DC, we have the latest issues of Action Comics, Ultimate Spider-Man, and Batman and Robin Year One. And as far as new books, there is a new The Question, All Along the Watchtower, Issue One, from writer Alex Segura and Cian Tormey on art, featuring Renee Montoya, who, if you did not read, I think it was All In, Issue One, Renee Montoya, as The Question has taken on. Yeah, she's kind of the person. She works at the Watchtower now, the Justice League Watchtower. So this is a book about her.
I might check that out.
Yeah, I'll see what the preview art looks like. And I like Alex Segura.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, you know, we want to know what you thought about this week's books, what you think about Paul's adherence to the outline. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
I don't know if we can use their comments on the show unless they're on the outline. but you can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, hey, guys, we'll do this all over again next week. Great chatting with you today, and I'm so sorry that you offended Andrew so much that he had to leave.
He's okay.
I don't know. I don't know if he can recover from this, Paul.
Well, maybe he needs Dr. Doom to give him a mystical artifact to bring him back to life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
All right, party people. We will talk to you next week.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.